Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
You're listening to the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Talking wrestling, going at it as hard as we can. Nothing can get by us. Turn them on and try them. It's Jeff and the Trendsetter here on the High Spot Podcast. You like that?
Yeah, doing it the only way we can.
The only way we can. Talking about the week that was in all of professional wrestling. Follow us on all our social media platforms, the Facebook page, on Instagram, and on Snapchat at High Spot Podcast. Dude, everything and anything happened this week. I mean, we have so much to talk about. This is the last chance I'm going to get a chance to say great balls of fire because we are recapping, which was a very surprisingly good pay-per-view in Great Balls of Fire, and also talking some G1 Climax, which is going to get set to happen in only just maybe a few days away now. And also we are joined by Mark Warzeka from Comedy Central and AfterBuzz TV. We're going to congratulate him on his Raw After Show debut. He's been on there for a while doing some post shows, but now he is now part of the group, as you would say.
He's joining the band.
At AfterBuzz TV, the Raw After Show. But man, what a week it was. And I want to thank you because I was kind of like mulling whether we should go to the WWE Live event on Friday, MSG, going back and forth, pondering. I was kind of busy. I go, Brian, you know, look it up at the price to see if we can go. And, you know, this is just basically on a whim. We're like, you know, let's go check it out. And, well, it was like a few blocks away that we were, you know, going to MSG. It's not that far. So we met up. We went to MSG. Thank you for the popcorn. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you for the Sprite.
Sprite, which is crazy expensive at MSG, but
which just shows you how cheap Jeff and I are for the mere fact when you go into MSG. And this is what I understand in terms of going to these events. I know it's family time, and Jeff and I joke about this. Like, I tell Jeff, if we ever have kids one day, and I know I'll have kids eventually one day, just the woman doesn't know it yet. It's going to be amazing that if they get into this type of line of work that we're in and they love professional wrestling like you and I do, how expensive is it going to be, you know, to buy the merchandise,
so
buy the popcorn,
you're
all that
no,
stuff?
No, they're not going to get into the wrestling.
No, I'm going to forbid them from watching professional wrestling.
But you're going to sneak around and not watch wrestling.
I'm going to sneak around going to WrestleManias with you because if I take them to WrestleManias,
God.
They're not going
to won't
be able to afford it.
The price that you would have to pay. But we go see the live event. It's a really good show. I mean, you get your money's worth when you go to the live event. They really stack the card, especially since they're in New York City, MSG, the SummerSlam Heatwave Tour. And we go there, and news broke beforehand that Austin Aries had been released by the WWE. So to start off, me and Brian are walking, you know, to MSG, and we're talking about it. And we were talking, and we'll get into it with Mark Warzeka, that nowadays, if you're a wrestler, the WWE isn't the end-all, be-all. But you wonder what led to Austin Aries being released, what happened. And there's a lot of people going and saying that, you know, it was his attitude backstage. He didn't want to be pigeonholed. And pigeonholed, I didn't realize how many people knew that word until this week when pigeonholed was the word for Austin Aries. He didn't want to be pigeonholed in the cruiserweight division, kind of lost three in a row to Neville, and then was kind of like just stuck there with, you know, those, and I hate to say it, those crappy storylines for the other undercard guys on 205 Live. And maybe one day maybe you could write a book on what's going on with 205 Live and the disaster that I feel that it is. But Austin Aries, were you shocked that this happened?
Well, first of all, it'd be a pretty short book to write about that. But no, I got to be honest, I wasn't. There was some there's something under the works where people were talking about it. And like you could definitely tell when Austin Aries would be interviewed about him taking some time off. They would ask him, are you taking time off because are you injured? And he'd be like, well, everybody's injured nowadays, or, you know, when you're doing the crazy schedule that WWE does. But it just seemed from the text, and I know you can't take much emotion from text, that he just kind of wanted to take a break and reevaluate things. And, I mean, everything they said, I mean, he's very difficult to work with. I even spoke to the Mooney Barber about this, too. I think, you know, as much as people might complain that, you know, Austin Aries is difficult to work with, he's annoying, he's just not a good person to be around when he's at work. But that just showed me the passion he has, because he doesn't want to be just somebody who shows up to work every day and be dictated what to do, where, listen, we're using you here, we're not using you here. He's at the tail end of his career. He still has a lot of years left in him, but He's even contemplated retirement prior to going to WWE. And
do other things.
To do other things. I think right now he doesn't want to be the kind of guy just waits in the back and just kind of hopes that creative has something for him. I think at this stage in his career, he has a new book coming out. Had a new book, and it's out right now about him being a vegan and the difficulties and the trials and tribulations of doing something like that, especially you know traveling down the road. I think this is the best thing for him right now. I think for them both parting ways, and it looks like Austin Aries asked for the release more than to be granting him it, I think it just works both ways. And like the point you made, a lot of people thinking, oh my God, this is terrible, it's horrible. Well, Austin Aries is probably the greatest day of his life because he doesn't have to now be dictated in terms of a type of schedule he has to live by. He can live by his own schedule. Now, whether he goes back on the indie scene, which I think he's done that thing, that part of his career I think is kind of come and gone. But, you know, Ring of Honor is still a possibility. New Japan, Global Force, if that's a possibility, going back to you know, the new brand, which is renamed from Impact Wrestling. I think he has options there. And, you know, if you were to hang up the boots right now, as annoying as it might be, and I just heard from the Reed Barber that they took out the Neville Austin Aries.
Oh, yeah, that didn't make it. That wasn't that even in it. The... So he doesn't get royalties from that either. He
doesn't get royalties from that. It's such a good match. I think all this was just accumulating, and, you know, they both go their separate ways, and Austin Aries will be just fine.
Yeah, he'll be just fine. Like we were talking about, and we will talk about with Mark Warzeka here, you don't have to be in the WWE to be successful. And so...
Just look at us.
He'll be he'll be just fine. To whether whose fault it was, I don't know, because if Austin Aries is frustrated, he shouldn't really take it to work, and you know it should be another way. Now, whether he does feel he built a resume and WWE hasn't seen it, well, you know, you're in WWE. Vince McMahon, Chris Jericho made a great point. Vince McMahon doesn't care what you did at Ring of Honor. He doesn't care what you did at Impact, Global Force, whatever the hell they call it now. You know, he cares what you can do for them now. So maybe it was just frustration on both sides. Whether it leaned one way or the other, I don't know. But the thing is, Austin Aries will be fine. He's got a new book out. It's just kind of weird that now Thea Trinidad, his girlfriend, his fiance, is in NXT. So you'd think that it was a great pairing now and everything was going to go work well. We thought he was happy, but it wasn't the case. But again, though, we think at the end of the day, Austin Aries will be fine. Now, to be an independent wrestler, it is probably one of the best times to do so. So to Austin Aries, you know, good luck. And we hope we have not seen the last of you. And hopefully one day we'll get you here on the High Spot podcast. But we're walking to MSG, a very loaded card that on that night because it is MSG. So we get there, we sit in our seats, and then we get to see, of course, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura, KO and AJ Styles, and that's where I want to go to because AJ Styles becomes a new U.S. champion. It really doesn't happen a lot. We were wondering, oh, what did Kevin Owens do? Is this part of the script? Is it maybe to compensate for Austin Aries being let go, which I find it hard to believe because Austin Aries is Austin Aries, but I mean, it's too unrelatable. It's very unrelatable, but congratulations goes out to AJ Styles, and it just shows you that anything can happen at a live event, especially when you're in New York City at MSG.
Well, I think, yeah, if it was in New York City, MSG, I think that was one of the reasons why it probably happened. I mean, it was a pleasant surprise to us and a pleasant surprise to all the audience. Nobody really expected it, which nowadays, you know, everybody's, you know, smart marks and smart fans thinks they know what's going to happen. So a great change of pace there. But again, there was a lot of debate of why it happened, too. I didn't hear anything about the Austin Aries thing where, you know, that might be an issue of why they did it. But, you know, Dave Meltzer had spoken before about how, you know, maybe Kevin Owens was injured. Maybe they were going to a different route because if you really look at it, prior to the live event in Madison Square Garden, AJ Styles had won a battle royal to become the number one contender, which you thought you were going to see in the upcoming pay-per-view at Battleground, who he's going to contend against Kevin Owens for the U.S. title. He wins at Madison Square Garden. So what does that do with the storyline now on SmackDown, which made it quite interesting because you're like, okay, well, they're going this route, and now it throws a monkey wrench into everything.
And then, of course, Kevin Owens' Twitter, of course, in great heel fashion, goes black, and his explanation after a few days was that he is mourning for America because they don't have the face of America anymore to be their U.S. champion. So just great heel stuff by Kevin Owens. And
great,
of course,
patriotism right there.
Of course, we would see him in tag team action at SmackDown. But again, though, it was a great time at MSG, and if you guys can go do it, especially when, even if you sit in the nosebleeds, it's worth it because for at least 2-3 hours, you get to enjoy a WWE event, and, you know, it's a family thing. It's MSG in New York City. Get a chance to go to the Garden. If it's anywhere local, I do recommend to go see it. Especially,
but be forewarned, those nosebleed sections are pretty unforgivable when, you're all packed in there like a sardine can. Even sardines have more room to move around with all that oil and stuff. It was getting kind of uncomfortable towards the end, and but you're right. It was a great event to go to, but something
I just think you're too buff, Brian. At first I thought it was me, but you're just too buff for me, man. Next time we need to sit one seat away from each other.
So you have to buy three chairs, basically.
Yeah, maybe. You're just too buff.
It's like an airline. You have to buy two seats now to fill in. Well, thank you for that, Jeff. I appreciate it. But something I noticed about the live event at Madison Square Garden is that for the people who went there, they'll probably notice it too. A lot of empty seats. Although it was kind of a packed house and there was a lot of enthusiasm from the crowd. And maybe this is me just dating myself. I remember during the Attitude Era, Stone Cold, Rock, Undertaker. That place was packed.
It's over. It's not the Attitude Era anymore.
Oh, my goodness. I'm getting...
Let it go. You're like Del Rio. Wow. Let it go, man.
Wow, dude.
We're in 2017.
Lectured from the guy who loves to live in the past. I call you Retro Jeff. That should be your nickname now because you all like living in the past.
He
loves
that.
All the sitcoms. I was on YouTube
showing Jeff... The past is the bleeping past.
Showing Jeff old... sitcom intro theme songs, and Jeff's getting all nostalgic. It's ridiculous, and I'm getting the lecture from you. Okay, well,
let's outro this weekend to Perfect Strangers. How about that?
Okay, there you go.
All right, see, here it is. I was gonna surprise you guys, but I was like, you know what, let's outro to Perfect Strangers, the end credits, when we end the show.
One of the best outro end credits that I've in my lifetime have heard.
And how about TGIF too? And it's Friday night when the mood is right
at the restaurant.
Gonna have some... No. See, not the restaurant.
Even that's lost its quality, too. The restaurant used to be really good.
Yeah. TGIF. Were you Family Matters and Perfect Strangers, Full House, and Step by Step Guy?
Yeah. Well, I didn't like Step by Step that much.
Suzanne Summers still had it going on.
She did. But, I didn't feel that show. But it was always a flip-flop between that. It was Perfect Strangers, Family Matters, and then everything else after that was part of the lineup.
All right, so we got Mark Warzeka joining us just shortly. He is, of course, Comedy Central director, comedian. Also, he now does the post-Raw shows for AfterBuzz TV. Check them out every Monday night right after Monday Night Raw. And we promote that because you don't have a show after Raw either. So go check them out, too. Very funny, very
Definitely.
Funny show. That's actually a show produced by Maria Menounos and her company. So, we wish her a speedy recovery too. But now we're going to recap Great Balls of Fire, and we recap it with Mark Warzeka. But now let's talk about, for example, we're going to get into the main events with Mark. So let's talk about, for example, the tag team matchup that we saw, the Iron Man 30-minute tag team match between the Hardys and Sheamus. Well, you do it much better than I do, has it?
Oh, Sheamus and Cesaro. Oh, Sheamus and Cesaro. That gets a little annoying too, doesn't it? Just like saying great balls of fire, Jeff. I see it in your face.
So
I see my balls in your face.
Oh, only in your dreams, my friend. But your thoughts on the match. I thought it was actually a well-done match. There was a point where I thought that, whoa, Sheamus and Cesaro are going to blow out the Hardy Boys here. But then, of course, they come back and tie it up at 3-3 in the last minutes. And, of course, the Hardys fall seconds late to getting the match tied up, and the winners and still tag team champions are Sheamus and Cesaro. Yeah.
That's completely wrong. But to your point, yeah, it was a really good Iron Man match. Whenever there's a clock involved, it's always a weird dynamic because, in terms of timing, you always want to make sure you time it out properly. But a great start of the match where you had the quick pinfall from Sheamus. 1-2-3 automatically down 1-0, and I just really like the psychology of the match. I thought both teams from the very get-go, Jeff, always have worked well together. They've already had three matches, and not to mention all the house shows they've done. We saw them at Madison Square Garden. They have great chemistry, but it just goes back to what you and I discussed possibly maybe after WrestleMania, where we're kind of questioning how long is this nostalgia act going to last. Because as much as we love the Hardy Boys, we love living in the past, especially you and I from the good old
especially
days.
Especially me, the way you make it sound.
Well, you made me sound like I was the same exact way. But, there is that nostalgia feeling. How long was it going to last? Because the whole debate was going to be whether or not Matt Hardy was going to finally get the rights to this broken gimmick. And I think on Raw, they kind of gave you that impression.
Yeah,
now,
a few steps closer, as they were saying, obsolete and deletion.
I don't think necessarily the Hardy Boys, Jeff and Matt, are going to be going their separate ways just yet. But I think in terms of their quest for the tag team titles, I think that's come to an end. I think Sheamus and Cesaro are a great tag team.
And give them credit, man. They have stepped it up, and they have become a great tag team. Give credit to Cesaro for teaming up with Tyson Kidd, then teaming up with Sheamus, and just getting the best out of every tag team partner possible with Cesaro.
See, the Tyson Kidd thing really, really pulls on my heartstrings, though. Not just because he got injured. And now his career is most likely over in ring. He has a new role with WWE, but I thought that team had so much more potential too. I would have loved to seen it continue, but unfortunately, injuries like that happen in the business. But Sheamus and Cesaro, you're right. Give them 100% credit for the mere fact that these are two individuals that have had, you know, some type of success. Sheamus more success on the singles career than Cesaro. We always talked about how Cesaro deserved that push. Now these two together, it's really good, and
they work basically.
And they work well together. It just works.
And if you want to get to know him better, I definitely suggest you listen to Talk Is Jericho with Sheamus and Cesaro this week. It's really good. Listen to really got me through my morning heading to work, and you know how much I hate going to work. And of course, you know, afterwards on Monday Night Raw, the Hardys seem to, you know, continue their losing ways against, out of any other team, the Club, Gallows and Anderson. And at first I'm thinking, wow, okay, you hear the song and you're like, wow, maybe this is the chance for the Club to do something. And then all of a sudden it just gets thrown away, snapped away as the Revival comes out, steals their glory, and then beats on the Hardy Boys. And we might see now a Revival and Hardy Boys feud, which, hey, I'm down with. But I'm like, poor the Bullet Club. Poor the Club, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well,
Gallows and Anderson.
It'll always be the Bullet
And you know what it made me say? It made me think one thing. Fuck the Revival.
Definitely. I think maybe that was done more on purpose for the mere fact that, you know, the Bullet Club in New Japan have been saying that to the Revival. And so how much can the Revival get revenge on the previous existing members of the Bullet Club, Gallus and Anderson? But, yeah, it's an interesting dynamic now that the Revival is back at 100% now. And just interesting to see where the Club is going to go now, because they've had somewhat of a, not just lost in the shuffle, but trying to re-find their identity. And so you like to hope this is the beginning of a tag team division that will continue in its depth. But in terms of the Hardys, they'll probably have the rivalry, like you said, with the Revival. That's the way it's booked right now. It looks like it's going to be booked. But I really see this no longer being the Hardy Boys, but we're going to see more of the broken Matt Hardy and Brother Nero characters as it goes by, which will bring a new interesting dynamic, because the Hardy Boys of what they did before in the past is kind of, I think, lived its course.
Now, Jeff Jarrett says that there's nowhere near an agreement. Then Rebby Hardy comes out and says, what the F are you talking about, Jeff? We had an agreement in principle as of last week. So who knows where this broken saga unfolds. Maybe next week it'll all be done. Maybe not. Maybe there'll be more cursing back and forth. But who knows? But eventually, hopefully, we'll see the broken gimmick in WWE. Jeff Jarrett, please do not hurt your company more with the boys by holding something that, you know what, it doesn't really hurt you guys giving it away. It extends an olive branch and a bridge with the Hardys. Just let, you know, like I said, let it go. And we want to see the broken gimmick in WWE. We will see if it happens down the road. But also another interesting matchup at Great Balls of Fire. And I'm going to get as many as I can in on these, because this is going to be the last week of Great Balls of Fire. But Sasha Banks and Alexa Bliss, I thought it was a very good match. I thought these two have chemistry, whether they like each other in real life or not, doesn't matter. They have chemistry in the ring. And I thought their matchup superseded, and you're giving me a look.
Do they have heat with each other?
They from what everyone's saying and what they're building is that they don't like each other in real life. So that's what the story is.
That sometimes makes the best rivalries.
And that's and it was weird seeing Dana Brooke and Emma bring it up on the pre-show and make an emphasis on it. So maybe it is a work, but they're using how they don't really like each other in real life to emphasize the battle between these two. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think that whole thing with the twisting her arm by Alexa Bliss is awesome heel heat.
Yeah, you were surprised by that.
I know. I was like, oh my God, right?
Yeah,
I broke her arm. I didn't see that SmackDown one, nor I don't remember it.
Well, no, yeah, it was a while ago, so I'm sure a lot of people didn't remember. So she did the same thing in SmackDown.
So she's double jointed. So guys, holy crap, she's double jointed.
Yeah, if Alexa Bliss isn't hot already, just the fact that she's double jointed makes her hotter now. Yeah.
Buddy Murphy, we freaking hate your guts. And I think it was entertaining. And those double knees from on top of the commentating position from Sasha Banks to Alexa Bliss was outstanding. And you know what? I think this matchup, if you could build it, you know, forget about Bayley. Forget about Nia Jax for a second. Focus on this rivalry. And I would love to see this one continue heading into SummerSlam. Just these two women. I think it would really do a great job. And I think these two have chemistry. And I would love to see them again at SummerSlam.
As much as I would agree with you in that point that, yeah, you know, you want to extend this rivalry a little bit longer, there seems to be some legit heat there. And, you know, like I mentioned before, it came to a shock for me. I didn't really see it there. Didn't really see the pre-show in terms of what Dana Brooke and Emma were
emphasizing. I don't blame you for seeing the pre-show. I mean,
if there is heat, if they don't like each other, like I've said before, I think that's what always makes the best rivalries, because you're always trying to top the other. You're always trying to outdo the other. So it makes for great chemistry. They do have good chemistry in the ring. Storyline seems to be working well. Of course, this is going to extend and continue on. But when you make the comment, you're like, forget about Bayley, forget about Nia Jax. As much as I would say, yeah, you're kind of right now because you want to focus on this because this is potential gold. I don't really want to forget about Nia Jax. I mean, the biggest thing for me, which is, you know, why I feel like the Cruiserweight division has suffered, why the women's division on Raw has suffered, is because they don't make an emphasis on having storylines outside the women's title.
Yeah, and neither does SmackDown, by the way.
Neither
does
SmackDown.
That is suffering, by the way. I don't need to see any more Fatal 5-Ways. That whole women's division right now, it's in a little bit of a pigeonhole because they're not really doing anything with the side women. And I don't want to say side women in a bad way, but they're not doing anything with on the side. You know what I mean? It's just, to me right now, it's frustrating watching it. I think...
not everything is about the Universal title. Not everything is about the WWE title. There are other titles, and they're not. There are other storylines that we find interesting. Other than the main championships, the women's division and Cruiserweight division lack that.
That's the hardest part, having that second angle and not having it be about the title. Because
and to me, there's no excuse because it's a three-hour show for Raw. You should have enough time to develop other angles, especially in the other divisions. If you're going to be highlighting the Cruiserweight division and the women's division, don't give us these ridiculous things about, you know, Noam Dar breaking up his girlfriend in an I Quit match with Cedric Alexander. Give us some legit storylines here that we can be involved in and invest in, and that's how you're going to improve your product and that division.
Shocker of all shockers, dude. I came on here last week, and I could have told you, as guys my witness, Bray Wyatt would not freaking beat Seth freaking Rollins. And what happens? I probably picked the easiest one on this card, and I lost. Bray Wyatt comes out with the win, cheating or not. Hey, he picked the victory over Seth freaking Rollins, which I've kind of scratched my head because is he not the face of 2K18? And you gotta have him lose. And then on Monday night, again Bray Wyatt comes out with the win, and then you see Seth Rollins now involved in the whole Dean Ambrose and the Miz fiasco. A lot to throw at you, Brian. But your thoughts here on what we thought was guaranteed loss for Bray Wyatt.
Well, like when we previewed the show before of Great Balls of Fire in this event, we're like, what's the point of talking about this? There's no question Bray Wyatt was going to lose. Leave it for the WWE to change it up on everybody. When everybody thinks they already know what the ending's going to be, hey, we'll do it for this for no apparent reason. And to me, it doesn't really help Bray Wyatt as much because I think the damage has already been done with the character. For me, there needs to be a lot of revamping. I don't know if you would agree with me on that one, Jeff, with the Bray Wyatt character. It's not going to take just one win or a second win against Seth Rollins straight up to correct all the mistakes that have been done with the Bray Wyatt character, I believe. But then this whole mixing in with Dean Ambrose and The Miz. Honestly, Jeff, I like to feel it's really them just kind of plugging up holes and really trying to combine two storylines together because there's always that nostalgia that we saw in MSG with Ambrose and Seth Rollins and the whole potential of a reunion for the Shield.
Oh, man. WWE, we get the idea that you're teasing a Shield reunion. We know Dean Ambrose is there. We know Roman Reigns is there. We know Seth freaking Rollins is there. We don't need to be reminded every 20 seconds about a possible Shield thing. It kind of takes away with it when it happens organically, right?
Yeah, of course. And it's somewhat insulting to our intelligence in a way that we know they all get along. But, Jeff, for the mere fact that Ambrose and Rollins have had such a heated rivalry with each other, have had some pretty historic matches against one another, and now because Seth Rollins is on the right side of good now, that they can kind of overlook their history. I would appreciate more if they did acknowledge their history, if they did not go so buddy-buddy with each other anymore, because at the end of the day, Seth still betrayed them.
This man beat you down with a freaking chair and enjoyed every second of it.
Exactly. So to me, that's what just kind of ruins it for me. I'm sure the fans are excited for that potential like we talked about. And yes, we know all three of them on the show.
But let it happen organically.
Let the history be there still. We know the history of the Shield, but let the history of these rivalries still continue on.
Dean Ambrose still has not paid for his sins. And I think that's what's getting him in trouble as being a face. He has not paid for his sins. Even though Triple H supposedly, you know, saying that, you know, he bit the hand that fed him. To me, it's still not paying for his sins as he betrayed the Shield. So we'll find out. He is pigeonholed. Oh, again, pigeonholed is the word now. He is with Dean Ambrose in this whole Miz fiasco. And for Bray Wyatt, we'll find out. But let's just say that the road to get to the Universal Championship is stacked, not only for Bray Wyatt, but for guys like Finn Balor, et cetera, et cetera. Now we go to The Miz and Dean Ambrose. Again,
oh, man.
Listen, I love The Miz. I love Maurice was amazingly gorgeous at Great Balls of Fire. I like the fact that, you know, if you tell me that Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel were going to be at a pay-per-view and they're going to be booked, I would have been like, hell no. But look, they're there. They're being used. So good for them. But just this match doesn't do anything for me because, all right, I just want it to go to the next level. The Miz, give him credit. Him and Maryse are doing a great job. They've made the Intercontinental title mean something when it's around his waist, when he's carrying it. But I just don't care for this rivalry anymore. And we were right. Miz beat Dean Ambrose. And now we're going to see maybe the Miz, Taraj, and Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins.
All I can say about this, Jeff, and I won't waste any more time on this. Certain things just, they've run their course. And this whole Dean Ambrose, Miz has run its course. Let's please move on. We've seen this on SmackDown. We've seen this on Raw. People can argue with us and send us your comments on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. I just think it has not lived up to any billing whatsoever. So let's move on from this rivalry. I'm tired of the whole fact that, you know, Dean Ambrose is not a marketable champion. He's not, doesn't look like a champion. I get it, all right? I'm just done with it. I wanted to move on, but unfortunately, it looks like it's going to continue.
And you think there's heat in Studio 51 here on the High Spot Podcast? No. Yeah. There is even more heat on Enzo. And just reading about what's going on, Roman freaking Reigns actually threw him from the bus because he was getting on people's nerves on the bus, on the tour bus. And then, you know, the fact that he's got Miz heat because Enzo now has to dress outside of the locker room. We don't know if he still does that. I think the future for Enzo now, maybe if Conor McGregor decides to join WWE at some point this year, maybe he has a lifeline. But I think that the days of Enzo Amore in WWE, I don't think that this is going to be the road where he has a future in this business. Now, reports say that he lives in LA. He's living that, you know, that rapper life, and he's making connections in Hollywood. Maybe this is a stepping stone for him, but I really don't see a future for Enzo that much. And Big Cass, I'm going to have to say a little bit more to believe that you're anywhere near close challenging the Beast for the Universal title.
Well, for Cass, he has to say those things. I mean, he has to make his character legit. As for Enzo, I've heard the same stories you've had, Jeff. I don't know, man. I just think the guy's his own worst enemy. I mean, there's one thing about having confidence in yourself, and everybody has an ego. You have to be, especially to make it to the level of WWE and all the stuff that Enzo, hey, let's give credit where credit's due, all the stuff he's done with the team of Enzo and Cass from NXT to the WWE, but after a while, I mean, you mentioned that quote that Triple H said, you want to bite the hand that feeds you. That's what Enzo's doing right now. And so, like, hey, he might be one of the best talkers right now, maybe second to John Cena, right up there in that echelon. But just being that alone isn't going to get you anywhere. You know, as much as we hate the politicking world that we live in nowadays, it is a politicking world, and you have to be careful what you do, because to have the mindset of everybody wants to be a CM Punk now, everybody wants to tell the boss, I'm going to do it my way, I don't have to conform. You run the risk of something like this happening, and you're right. I think a move that we talked about previously of Enzo possibly going to the cruiserweight division after he's done with his rivalry with Cass might not be in his future right now. I think he's his own worst enemy, but he'll never admit to it, and he's a very proud guy. So we'll see how this continues on as the story continues.
And then just wrapping it up, the cruiserweight match between Neville and Tozawa. Hey, good try by Tozawa, but there's no way that we thought that Neville was going to come out and lose the Cruiserweight Championship, especially after a higher competition in Austin area. So we'll see if Cedric Alexander or TJ Perkins is next in line, but Neville still continues to dominate the Cruiserweight division.
I would love to see Cedric Perkins in that scenario. Cedric Perkins. Combine the two together.
Join forces and we're Cedric Perkins.
I've been watching so much Power Rangers, I'm combining them like Megazords or something like that. But Cedric Alexander, I think, has a great story. I think it could be more in terms of fans can invest in him in some way against Neville. As for the Tozawa-Neville match, I think just pure athleticism alone intrigued me to this match. But in terms of storyline, and man, how much is the Titus brand suffering right now? It can't get a win. So how much do you want to invest in this? They're like the big baller brand where, you know, it's going to last for only a short period of time.
How does Lonzo Ball switch from his father's shoes to the Nike Kobe's? That is just crazy.
Big ballers
do that, man. You're going to pay $450 for shoes, and then your son's going to change them. That's crazy. But we save the best two matches for last with Mark Warzeka. We talk about Great Balls of Fire. Wrap it up. Me and Brian think it was more than average show. I think it was really had some bright spots. We're going to get into the vehicular manslaughter on Roman Reigns and how he's still on the loose. And we'll also talk about Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe, which was, I think, delivered a lot. We really liked the pay-per-view. And we get a chance to talk with Mark Warzeka of Comedy Central and AfterBuzz TV, and just a very creative guy doing a short film with Rocky Romero 2 from New Japan. And we came about him because there's an interesting tour of Long Beach that he did on the video for New Japan when the G1 US special was there. That's how we got in touch with Mark. So we're going to get more in depth on Great Balls of Fire and so much more. And that interview with Mark Warzeka is right now here on the High Spot Podcast. All right, Brian, the interviews just keep getting better and better here on the High Spot Podcast, and we are so glad to be joined by Mark Warzeka, who you can see him on Comedy Central. He's a director, comedian, great writer, and also you can follow him on Twitter at Mark Warzeka. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here, man. And, of course, let me congratulate you, because yesterday I caught you on the AfterBuzz TV Raw After Show. Heck of a job. I think you were debuting there last night. What is going on, man? How is the Left Coast right now?
Oh, it's good. It's hot. Thanks for checking us out on AfterBuzz. That was I've had the opportunity to be a guest host on AfterBuzz for a lot of the wrestling after shows that they do. But that was my first night officially as part of the Raw After Show crew. We got a new Raw After Show team there. So it was a great time, and we'll be doing the after show on AfterBuzz every Monday night from here on out.
Mark, there's no question you're a jack of all trades here, because you're constantly busy and doing a bunch of stuff. And who would think, right, talking about wrestling, which, you know, believe it or not, you know, we talk about it as kids and growing up, we never grew out of it. So I guess the first question I want to ask you, maybe it's going back a little bit, what kind of drew you into maybe thinking of professional wrestling as something you wanted to really dive into and talk about for a living?
You know, for me, I guess as a wrestling fan, I was very lucky because I know a lot of people grow up in households where their parents don't want them to watch wrestling, and they discourage you from watching wrestling. And my family was quite the opposite. My grandparents were all immigrants. They came to Detroit in the 50s to work in the factories from Europe, and they immediately fell in love with American pro wrestling. They used to watch The Sheik and Bobo Brazil and Dick the Bruiser. And they just loved wrestling. It was a form of entertainment that they were able to, especially then, easily understand without yet speaking the language. You know, especially then, I think that was even simpler because there were less promos back then, right? So it was more in-ring. But they loved wrestling right away. As a kid, you know, I remember my dad coming home all excited with the VHS of the first WrestleMania and putting it in our brand new VCR to show the family. So
what's
I was just
VCR?
Kind of growing up with it. And, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I was just kind of growing up with it and always just enjoying it growing up.
Who was your go-to guy? Who was the one guy that was like, wow, this is it. This is my guy. Who was it for you?
I mean, as a little kid, probably Hogan, maybe Piper, you know, the 80s WWF, you know, superstars really certainly sucked me. And we had WrestleMania 3, you know, at the Pontiac Silverdome. I was growing up outside of Detroit, and that just felt like a monumental event with Hogan and Andre at the indoor attendance record. It was right by where I grew up. So I think that helped to further sort of cement me as a wrestling fan, and I just stayed so interested that it was my, you know, goal to work in the pro wrestling industry as an adult. And I was very lucky to get to start as a teenager doing ring announcing and play-by-play for some independent promotions in Michigan and then throughout the Midwest. So my whole entertainment career, my first paying jobs ever in the entertainment industry were in pro wrestling, ring announcing and doing play-by-play. And so I've always tried to stay close to the business since then.
You know, and you're, you know, successful in writing and just comedy and everything. And do you think that's where you get a lot of inspiration? Do you think that's what kind of helped you? Because all in all, it's the male soap opera. So it gives you, like, you know, good and bad, and it just all has plots to it. Is it something that you think inspired you in what you're doing now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you mentioned, like a lot of what I do is writing and directing, you know, for Comedy Central. I'm working with Disney right now and the Second City Comedy Theater. And I've been very lucky to get to work with some of those great places throughout my career. And for me, I mean, you guys know how it is as wrestling fans. You have those fans, you have those friends, I should say, who are fans and get the business, and you can bond with them about wrestling right away. And then, you know, a lot of other folks in your life who just don't get it. And they don't get why you like it. I have a friend who likes everything else that's sort of like, you know, quote unquote nerd culture. Like, he loves comic books. He loves sci-fi movies. He loves the Marvel movies. He loves all that kind of stuff, but doesn't get wrestling, you know? But for me, there's never been any difference. You know, when people say to you, oh, how can you watch the wrestling? It's all fake. It's like, I just saw Spider-Man Homecoming the other night, and I love that movie, and that was all fake, too.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've never seen the way my brain works, I've never seen any difference between enjoying professional wrestling as scripted, pre-planned entertainment and enjoying Jurassic World or enjoying Avengers or enjoying The Flash on TV or enjoying a Broadway play that you might go and see. It's all the same thing to me. It's actors performing, and professional wrestling in particular, I've always seen it as a form of live theater. The actors are in the ring performing for the audience. Just like you go to Broadway, you see the actors on stage performing a show. I've always seen it as the same thing.
So we're coming off Great Balls of Fire, and everyone had so much fun. You, as a comedy writer, you could write a whole play about Great Balls of Fire and just the name that WWE chose. Everyone mocked the name. I here had a thing where I would over-accentuate the word balls to Brian, and Brian would want to, you know, beat me up by the time we got to this pay-per-view.
You're just so obnoxious when you
I would
do
say,
it.
I would tell Brian, Great Balls of Fire, and he would just want to, like, punch me after every single time. But afterwards, I think it was probably the best Raw pay-per-view, and I think it's probably the best pay-per-view this year that the WWE had. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the Brock and Lesnar main event certainly stood out for me. It was short, and that's okay. If they wrestle another time, I'd love to see them get to go a little bit longer. But the Brock, Lesnar, and Samoa Joe main event I thought was really, really a dream match that, as a longtime fan of wrestling and a longtime fan of Samoa Joe, that I just never expected to see. You know, Joe, it almost felt like he was, well, we know what type of wrestler Vince McMahon prefers, right? He has a certain body type that he likes. He has a certain aura that he likes. And Joe doesn't fit at least Vince McMahon's, like, sort of stereotypical mold of a WWE superstar. And Joe had that great run in ROH. He had a run in TNA that was up and down. He had some, of course, amazing, even kind of historic matches with Kurt Angle, and then some rougher parts of that run where they had him doing some weird stuff at times that I don't know that he loved. But to get to see him now finally get the crack at WWE and just own this opportunity and own that show. And he was so fantastic this last month, and he and Brock are so well matched. I really just thought it was a gift and a surprise that we never thought we'd get to see as fans to see these two in a main event. And I hope we get to see them go another round. So that certainly stood out to me. And we got to see, you know, Roman Reigns, you know, commit attempted murder. And you don't get to see that in every show.
No, especially
so
when
that was interesting too.
No, Mark, you're right. Especially when we're in the PG era now, where you think you could get away with something like that, unless it was TV-14. You think you're watching the Attitude Era again. But, you know, speaking of Roman Reigns, I mean, you know, despite a lot of negativity that, you know, I've mentioned of it in terms of just character standpoint, I have nothing against the guy himself, and I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way about Roman Reigns, where, you know, maybe it's this thing where everybody just likes to boo him, and a lot of people feel that, you know, Braun Strowman is basically getting a lot of perks as a babyface because it is Roman. I don't really believe that. I feel Braun Strowman has worked his ass off to get where he is right now, has been such a great worker, and these two have a very good chemistry with one another. Now, obviously leading to the fact that Braun Strowman wins the match, Roman Reigns basically, like you said, tried to convict attempted murder on Braun Strowman, but basically made it known prior to his fight in the ambulance match with Braun Strowman that he was going to face the champion at SummerSlam. Does this now kind of throw a monkey wrench in because Braun Strowman has been so good? He's had so much momentum coming back. Obviously, he's not finished with Roman Reigns. And a lot of people thought Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar was going to be one-off. Do you see now the championship match after seeing Great Balls of Fire, I can't believe I just said that name, leading to SummerSlam, has the Universal title picture now changed? Can you see now possibly Samoa Joe, Braun Strowman working their way into this title match?
Yeah, possibly. You know, the Great Balls of Fire title has been so ridiculous. On our Raw, after show last night at After Buzz. We called it the Raw After Balls.
Yes, I was going to say.
Yes, I love that.
And it's hilarious. My guess is that the plan is going to be Brock and Reigns one-on-one at SummerSlam. But I do think that we will see, because I think it was such a hit with the fans, even more so than I think WWE might have expected, I do think that we'll see Brock and Joe go at least one more round. They need good opponents for Brock, and Joe manages to come off as a believable, legitimate, tough guy who's unafraid of Brock Lesnar, and there are not a lot of people on the current roster who come off that way. So I think that we'll see those guys go again, and you know, maybe later in the year, maybe not till next year. Well, look, I mean, Brock's only there 4 times a year. So, yeah.
Yeah, great point by Roman. Great point by Roman on Monday night, too, right? You're never here.
What's that?
Great point by Roman when he talks about not handling the Braun situation because he's never there.
Yeah. Look, I got to say, you know, this may be a little nitpicky, but I didn't love the booking coming out of the Great Balls of Fire in that both the guys who were out in the ring on Raw, on the Raw After Balls, were challenging Lesnar had both lost their matches the night before. I mean, Roman Reigns lost to Braun Strowman, and Joe lost cleanly to Brock Lesnar's finisher. Like, Brock beat him with the F5. So that was a little funky that you have these two guys that lost the matches coming into the ring and challenging the champion the next night. They could have protected at least Joe a little bit more in that match, maybe by having some Heyman interference or something like that, to not have it be such a clean finish for Joe to lose to just one F5 and a 1-2-3. But I am glad Joe's still in the title picture.
I would love to see if they decided and they think that Braun and Joe were worthy enough. I think that would be a heck of a main event if you had a fatal four-way with all four of those guys. Not only would you have to reinforce the ring, but that's something that, could you imagine all four guys and just, first of all, they can test out whether a Brock and Braun would go well, and you'd get to see Joe and Brock again, and that's how you'd have your, you know, your second match. But I could see where it's a fatal four-way match at SummerSlam.
That's a really fun idea. I have not heard that mentioned anywhere yet, but boy, that would be incredible. And it definitely seems like the type of thing that would be right up Vince McMahon's alley, or would certainly appeal to him, all the giant guys in one match together. And, you know, I do want to say about Braun really quickly, as we think about him being on that level of being in a title match, this guy, you know, it's easy to forget now that when this guy first debuted on the roster, everyone was rolling our eyes at this guy. It's like, another no-talent monster that Vince is going to shove down our throats. That was everybody's kind of read on him when he first appeared. And maybe it was justified at first. But in the interim, this guy has really, really improved. He's got incredible charisma. He's got the it factor. He's connecting with fans in a natural, organic way. You know, cheers to him. I think he's really, really shown up and earned his place at the main event level.
And we've talked about creative booking. I think Joe and Braun have been the best booked this year. As to what we don't know, because like we said, Roman attempted like basically murder on Sunday night.
Yeah, Braun might be dead. We don't know. We don't know for sure where he is right now.
So that's why that let out. That's where my theory is that Braun is going to interfere in the Joe Roman match. I think you're going to get to a point where you're going to hear Braun, you know, and I think that's what's going to lead into. But man, that would be something great to have a fatal four-way between that mass of humanity in those four guys.
Yeah, but Mark brought up a great point, Jeff, that, you know, he mentioned before how something like Braun, and I was victim of also being one that just would nail Braun Strowman. I ended up calling him Braun Greenman because he just looks so green and so unathletic, and he's come leaps and bounds since that time where he debuted with the Wyatts till now. But you said that word organic, and things just organically happening. Do you find that becoming more difficult nowadays in WWE? That things, for example, the way we hate Roman Reigns and how things being force-fed down our throats, it's just not letting the fans not necessarily dictate the product, because obviously WWE is going to do what they want to do, but letting things just happen naturally and kind of going with the audience's feeling. Do you think that's more difficult nowadays because everything is so scripted?
Well, it seems like some of the guys that have had that organic connection with the fans over the last few years, at least, have sort of, it's been sort of a natural connection they've had with the fans that WWE ended up later capitalizing on, or were kind of late to the game on in some cases. I think of CM Punk, I think of Daniel Bryan, you know, where it really those guys kind of did the work on their own, and the WWE went, oh, okay, now there's something there, let's hop on to it. And Strowman, I think they've done a great job with Strowman in that they've pushed him. They've pushed him really, really well, and he's risen to the occasion, and the fans jumped on board. Sort of all the things came together almost like perfectly, you know, the way you'd want it as a promoter. With Roman, obviously, that hasn't happened with Roman Reigns, right, where they've given him the push, they've given him the opportunities. Obviously, he's a talented guy with a cool look, but for whatever reason, it just hasn't connected in the same way that these other guys have.
Joined by Mark Warzeka. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Warzeka, Mark with a C. And also follow him on his website on markwarzeka.com. A little plug for you there. Listen, man, I actually followed you about maybe a couple weeks ago. And basically, I was so jealous of you because you were shooting a video, Rocky Romero, and I was at my cubicle at work daydreaming about being able to be present for the G1 U.S. special. And I looked at you with such envy, and I saw you walking around Long Beach, and I was like, damn. But you're very entertaining, Mark. And that's why I was like, I got to get him on. Your experience, the G1 U.S. special, from every feedback that you get, got very positive reviews. Just your thoughts about that whole weekend, because that was, without a doubt, it was the talk of the whole weekend, that whole G1 special.
Yeah, I'll tell you guys, it was a real, real dream weekend as a New Japan pro wrestling fan. Just the fact that, you know, I am a huge, huge fan of New Japan, and just the fact that they were finally coming to the U.S. to do some shows here, and that it was going to be here in my backyard. I'm in Los Angeles, and there it is, just in Long Beach, you know, just a short drive, you know, down the 5 freeway to get there, and was really amazing. You know, sometimes we feel shortchanged out here on the West Coast because a lot of great indie wrestling stuff happens on the East Coast, you know. But lately some things are picking up out here. We've got PWG out here, which is, of course, fantastic to have. But those tickets are tough to get. I mean, you got to be online the second they go on sale.
Mark, if Topanga goes to a wrestling event, you know it's big. You know you've made it.
Yeah.
When Topanga goes to a freaking event. And I was so there jealous. You but you know you made it when Topanga goes to an event.
There you go, right? So, you know, that PWG we've got here now, so that's kind of odd. And now to have New Japan start, you know, in the U.S. here with these shows was an awesome, awesome thing for us fans out here. But, you know, it wasn't just, you know, fans out here. And this is the reason that Rocky and I made that New Japan guide to Long Beach, California, is because the tickets, you know, sold out very quickly to the G1 specials. And what they were able to track in the ticket sales is that people had bought tickets from multiple countries and from 38 states in the United States. So, you know, I think 80% of the tickets were sold to people outside of Southern California. So that's why we made that, you know, New Japan asked us to kind of make a video. They've done similar ones in Tokyo. They've done a video with some of the New Japan hosts walking around with New Japan stars there's one with Tanahashi where he sort of just walks around the area of the Tokyo Dome and Korakuen Hall, and they stop by some of the wrestling shops and some good places to eat. So they've already done that for Japan, and they wanted to do a similar thing for Long Beach. So that's why we did it as sort of a guide to fans who are coming from out of town to just say, hey, here's the arena, here's where to park, here's where to come in, and here's some stuff to do around here. So we had a lot of fun shooting. We shot for about 9 hours that day.
Wow.
Wow. together. but a lot of that was just drinking at Hooters. We took a very long lunch drinking beers at Hooters.
Hey, sacrifices.
nine hours of shooting, 1 hour of actually really working.
That's right.
Hey, sacrifices have to be made, Mark. And you know what? You know, sometimes that stuff like that has to get done. There's no question about it.
You
toughed it out, so we really appreciate that.
What a trooper. What a trooper. What a trooper, man.
But yeah, it was definitely great. It felt really like kind of a travel guide tour, like, of, you know, this is where you go, and those are the attractions you can do to enjoy the event. And it seemed like a really great atmosphere, like you said yourself. The ticket sales went by fast. You could definitely tell where the demographic is coming from, of who's ordering them and from where. But there's no question that the G1 special was a huge success. Not to mention the fact that, you know, we had Okada, Rhodes, and then we had Kenny Omega become the very first new face of America, become the IWGP U.S. champion. My thing is that I've always talked about, Jeff, how that, you know, I sound like an old man. I miss the old days, right? I love when there's competition. And we all know WWE is the main brand. It's global. It's everywhere. I've always had hopes that it was Kenny Omega and Okada and the momentum that New Japan's getting now. And with the G1 special here, do you see maybe any glimmer of hope that they're going to come back next year? But could New Japan maybe be that number two brand? Maybe at some point in the near future, maybe compete with WWE?
I think that, I think that New Japan is definitely in a great position. They're a hot promotion right now. And one of the things they have that I think is important for anybody to be a great number two promotion in the United States is for them to be different from WWE. I mean, anybody who tries to position themselves to be in that number two spot in the U.S. that is just with a product that's WWE light or just too similar to what WWE is offering is going to have a hard time. WWE's just they've just got too much product out there right now, and a lot of it's very good. 3 hours of Raw on Monday, 2 hours of SmackDown. There's NXT. There's other stuff like the women's tournament. There's special shows that they're doing. The pay-per-views, which are now more frequent than ever. There's so much of that. If you want to stand out, I think you've got to be different. And New Japan is different, and it's inherently different. It's not different because they're trying to be different. Just the product in and of itself, the Japanese wrestling product has always, the way it evolves historically over the last 50 years, has always been different than the U.S. product. It's more grounded. It's more athletically based. I sort of think of New Japan as if pro wrestling was real, it might look like this, right? It feels a little bit more, at times, even like a UFC show or an MMA show, mm-hmm. than it does a WWE show. So they set themselves apart in that in a lot of different ways, but primarily the style. So I think there's room for competition, and I think that they are aggressively aiming to expand internationally, and some of that's public. And I know you guys have heard that stuff and talked about it on the show about the the plans for the rest of this year and next year. They're going to open up a dojo here in Los Angeles. That's well underway. They want to get more shows out here, not just in the West Coast, but throughout the country in 2018. So they're definitely going to be more of a presence.
You know, I think that, you know, especially when you have like the Seattle market that you can reach and you have the West Coast, and it needs to be like a slow expansion, right? They can't be like, for example, you know, back in the day where the Crockett Promotions tried going West Coast and they tried going out of their means. I think they do a good job with the Ring of Honor cross promotion, because then you get guys that are on the East Coast. So I think if they focus, you know, let's get that West Coast market, because, you know, it's closer to Japan than on the East Coast, I think that's great. But one of the leaders of that, of making it different and being a revolution, is Kenny Omega. I can clearly tell you right now that if he is not one or number two, like best in the world, I don't know where he is. I think he right now he's clearly number one. Hey, how amazed are you that a guy like Kenny Omega has been able to do what he does in New Japan, and how great and how good is he right now?
Amazing. And you're watching those two, his last year has been unbelievable. The matches with Okada, which are classics. We're going to be talking about those matches 10 years from now, 20 years from now. And just the G1 special, look at those three matches that he had just over those two nights.
Different styles with all three guys.
Yeah, it's different styles with all three guys. Epic matches, killing himself out there. Some brilliant spots and ring work. Completely innovative. I mean, the guy is just pushing the entire art form right now. And he's got a great rival in Okada, because Okada is doing the same thing. Okada's doing the same thing. His title run has been absolutely unbelievable, this current one that he's in. And, you know, he's had historic matches against a series of guys, and, of course, the Omega ones being next level. So it feels like not only are these guys innovating and creating and breaking down barriers of where the whole pro wrestling art form can go, it also feels like they're just getting started. I think that's part of what's really exciting about it. It's like, these guys are still relatively young, and they're really hungry, and, you know, they're just getting started.
And it looks like Kenny's in it for the long run there. The way he sounded in his speech afterwards, he's going to, you know, maybe, what is he, 33 or so? I think he wants to be something different. I think he's not about the money. I think he wants to make change. He's emphasized that a lot, and I believe he's in it for the long run. One thing I got to ask you, too, is they have become revolutionary in the fact that you take a guy like Austin Aries that got let go by WWE this past week. You know, guys like that now don't need the WWE. Look what they're doing with Hot Topic. And I think in about 6 months, or I would say even now, that is huge for the independent wrestler that they can get into a market like that. And you thank the guys like Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks that have done that, because now it shows you that you don't need WWE to be successful. And me and Brian were talking about it, like, man, I don't think WWE would know what to do with this guy. But talk about what they're doing as far as like all the marketing and the hustling that these guys do with their YouTube, with their shirts. How hot are they right now?
Yeah, I saw that the Young Bucks posted on Twitter just a couple days ago that they've already made more money by right now, early July this year, than they made last year altogether. So it's like these guys are killing it right now. And to your point, I think that there's something really special right now going on in the wrestling business as a whole. And it is, you know, exactly what you identified there. There's enough ways now digitally that you can, if you're creative and you're hardworking, that you can get your product and your persona out to the fans directly. There are enough ways to do that now that you don't necessarily have to be with WWE to find your audience, to sell your t-shirts, you know, to get hits on your videos. And these guys are pushing the envelope in terms of that aspect of the business right now. But, like, you know, when I think back, I think the first guy who really stood out to me in the last few years who really built his own sort of brand was Colt Cabana. You know, Colt was
the godfather of
been
our
on the
podcast.
Indie scene for a long time. It's like he does all these different things. He was the first one to do a wrestling podcast, and now, you know, we're all here in it, but he was kind of the first one to do that, to do his own live wrestling comedy shows. Like, just a really smart guy who built his own brand. But now it's like all these guys are doing that, right? Cody's doing that. Ryback's doing that. You know, the Young Bucks are doing that. These guys are making a really, really good living finding their audience outside of WWE. It's got to be something that WWE's probably keeping an eye on. But I think it's good for us, the wrestling fans, because it keeps more talent out there in the mix instead of WWE being able to kind of hoard everybody. It keeps more talent out in the mix, floating out there, being able to jump over to to New Japan, to Ring of Honor, to Impact Wrestling. Like you mentioned, Austin Aries, it's like, I'm sure we're going to see that dude in New Japan and ROH in no time. And I can't wait. I can't wait to see him have great matches with Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks and Cody and Okada and Jay Lethal and all these great wrestlers in that scene.
Yeah, it's definitely a new age. I mean, from how Jeff and I used to watch it back during the Attitude Era, even in the early 90s too, when there still were territories around the country. So now, like how Jeff had mentioned before and you talked about, like, you know, the WWE isn't necessarily the only place to go now. I think most people, since I like to say maybe Cody's departure, are starting to get the idea that maybe it's not a scary thing to say, you know what, maybe it's not the right time for me right now. Maybe I need to go spread my wings somewhere else, and I could always ultimately come back. With that being said, talking about how good Kenny Omega is, and I could spend hours talking about his ring psychology, you know, Jim Ross on his podcast, the Jim Ross Report, talked about comparing him to, you know, Brian Pillman in terms of the mind he has for professional wrestling. I can clearly see, and I wonder what your opinion is, that Kenny Omega never makes it to the WWE, and that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, because ultimately what he's done in New Japan has been so revolutionary that if he went to WWE, in my opinion, not only would they not know what to do with him, not only would he be used incorrectly,
be frustrated,
but he'd be frustrated and would kind of sour everything he'd done in New Japan. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they would. I mean, I guess you never know, but I would suspect that he would feel limited in what they would allow him to do in ring in WWE. And they have their own style. They have that WWE main event style that they want their wrestlers to work. You know, one of the things I think that's also different about New Japan as opposed to WWE is WWE has a formula, and their formula is effective. And we've seen a lot of great matches in that formula, even some great ones, just, you know, through this year, you know, AJ and Cena, for example. Mm-hmm. But like they have a formula, their main event formula, and it can work really well. But up and down the card, WWE matches often feel really similar to each other. And one thing I think New Japan does really well is the matches, the styles feel a lot different than one another. And like you said, Kenny likes to work different styles all the time with different guys. And I think that he would feel really limited in just doing that WWE main event style, is my suspicion. You know, and if guys have good, healthy alternatives where they're making a good living, where they feel creatively fulfilled, where they find an audience, then they're going to be willing to stay out there in the non-WWE scene. And there were a lot of guys, you know, back in the day, before there was, you know, WWE's been the only kind of game in town for a while, but when WCW was still healthy, for example, like, Sting never went there. You know, I mean, Sting didn't go there until a couple of years ago. You know, he was a main event guy who had a great career completely outside of WWE. So if there's a place for guys to be and they're happy there, then maybe they'll stick around. And now there are places for guys to be again. And I think that's going to keep growing.
Unless Kenny wants a WrestleMania moment, and I use, you know, the air quotes, right? That would be the only reason that it would be the incentive for him to go. If he truly wants to have in the next few years that main event or that matchup with AJ Styles, then that's why he'll go, to create his masterpiece on the biggest stage. But other than that, he's doing quite fine. And the only thing I worry about Kenny is he's like really exerting himself so much. Every match in New Japan is like a WrestleMania moment match for him. So I just worry, the only thing I would worry about Kenny is just putting a lot of tread on that tire so soon.
Yeah, you know, I was lucky enough to get to, you know, be backstage for the
lucky
for,
you.
I was working
lucky
for New
you.
Japan.
Stop rubbing it in, man.
Shows.
Mark, you know what? This is going great now. Now you're just rubbing it in. You were backstage. You know, this interview's over.
it was an honor. I mean, I was marking out. I was a big super fan back there, but just trying to keep my cool and not embarrass myself. But you know, just seeing somebody stage. And Kenny is one of them comes to mind. You know, it's backstage after the Night 2 show, and he wrestled twice. And I was like, this guy's got to be laying down on a cot somewhere, you know, waiting to be stretchered out of there. And he's like up and around and talking to people and social and energetic. I'm like, how do these guys do this? He's got more energy right now than I've ever had in my entire life.
I think he was excited because they were going to go out to.
He didn't look like it.
I think they were excited because they were going to go in and out afterwards. So I think that's why he was excited.
Yeah, there you go. I know they all were certainly in the In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah, they never had an In-N-Out Burger before, so of course I'd mark out. When we first went to California for WrestleMania 31, the first thing I told Jeff as we got off the plane, we got to go to In-N-Out Burger. I've heard so much about it, I got to try it. And you know what? I wasn't disappointed. So I'm sure Kenny and the Young Bucks and the Bullet Club were pretty happy about that.
It lives up to the hype.
It does. It does. I mean, it's hard to imagine, right? But it does live up to the hype. And now I'm getting hungry for some In-N-Out Burgers, Jeff. We're here on the East Coast. But, you know, speaking of, you were talking about different styles and how the WWE style is different than, you know, New Japan is strong style. With there being now more alternatives and social media being the way it is, do you see also a different dynamic in WWE where they're actually recognizing other promotions now? I mean, you see the specials on the network. You know, they talk of Ring of Honor. They speak of TNA, actually. They did a Kurt Angle special where they didn't say the name, but they had a newspaper clipping saying TNA Wrestling had Dixie Carter on. I mean, do you see that this whole revolution changing? Not that WWE would ever go out of its way to promote another promotion, but you see now it's like people are getting out of the mindset that they're getting out of this whole bubble where, you know, WWE looks at it as if you haven't made it here, you haven't made it anywhere?
I think that they, yes, I think they're sort of experimenting with it in interesting ways. I mean, they have to have, you got to think that they have a very close eye on the same, the stuff we're talking about here, that the Young Bucks are doing what they're doing. And now they've got all their merch in Hot Topic, which is a big national chain. And, you know, stuff like that, they've got to be watching that and figuring out how they fit into that. And I think there's been some little signs that they're willing to adjust their business in small ways. And one of those was some of the deals that they've made with some of their announcers. Like when Mauro Ranallo was in doing SmackDown, and he was still doing all the other stuff that he does, you know, boxing and MMA. That was unusual for them. And it seemed like, oh, maybe they did that just for him. But then they made a similar deal with Jim Ross, where he's back doing song stuff with them, and he's also still doing, you know, he did these New Japan shows on Access, and he's under contract with WWE at the same time. You know, so it seems like they're getting, maybe opening up a little bit. When you see stuff like the women's tournament coming up, where they're bringing in all these women from all over the world, they did that with the cruiserweight stuff, definitely with the network, the British show. You know, definitely with the network, they're experimenting with bringing these different talents in and using them under the WWE umbrella, but not forcing them to be under contract just yet in all the cases. And I think that's new, and I think that's going to be something really interesting to watch and see how that develops and how WWE responds to the changing reality of the wrestling landscape.
Talk with Mark Wierzeka, man. Just all this New Japan Pro Wrestling talk. When me and Brian started this podcast a year ago, you know, we knew we were going to talk WWE, some Ring of Honor, you know, get into Lucha Underground. But this whole New Japan Pro Wrestling thing is just, you know, it's just taken a rise in the past year, and just amazing talking to Mark about it, who is was hands on at the G1 US Special. Now we got the G1 Climax, so we look forward to that. But getting switching gears to WWE, if you're writing for WWE and this whole Kurt Angle situation that's drawn out for a few weeks, who do you think, gut feeling, will be the mystery guest on Raw next week in Nashville, Tennessee?
Yeah, my pick is Claire Lynch. I'm saying either Claire Lynch or Dixie Carter. It's got to be one of those two.
Yeah.
I can't imagine who else it would be. It's going to be in Nashville, so that makes you think Dixie, right?
Yeah. You know what?
I love you to Dixie?
You never know. You know, she did have a thing with AJ Styles on TV.
Oh my
so
god.
That would be crazy. That would be just wow. I mean, from Dixie to go into WWE as a you know, as on-screen talent, that would be just weird.
Mark, do you want to squash the rumors of the fact that people are saying that this could be possibly another love triangle from the past with Stephanie and Triple H and Hunter leading to a WrestleMania match?
I think it may have to do with them, honestly. I think it may involve it does seem like it's about time for Stephanie to come back and about time for Triple H to come back for SummerSlam. I would not be surprised if it involved them. I would not.
And I don't like talking about people's relationships because we're not a gossip show. But if can Paige just like dump Alberto Del Rio already? I mean, this is and again, I don't want to use writing because you know we got a writer on with us, but it doesn't have a happy ending if it continues the way it's going.
Well, not only that, Jeff, Mark, wouldn't you say too the mere fact that now Global Force and Impact have merged into Global Force Wrestling, and Jeff Jarrett's really trying to replenish the ashes of what TNA used to be and the sour taste that's left in the mouth when you think of TNA and Impact. To have Alberto Del Rio as your champion, sorry, it's Alberto El Patron as your champion now, and him still holding this gripe with WWE, where production team has to bring up the volume, kill his mic. I mean, if you're your staff right now, you're the higher ups in Global Force right now. Have you made a mistake now making Alberto El Patron your heavyweight champion with all the issues he's been dealing with, and possibly can't let go of this gripe he's dealing with WWE?
Well, it's interesting, like, historically in the wrestling business, you know, it's an outlaw business full of a lot of rogue personalities, and guys are getting in trouble, and sometimes it gets just fly under the radar, but it's a different world now. Certainly, if this had happened in WWE, he would have been immediately fired. you know, they're a publicly traded company. They've got deals with, you know, partnerships with major corporations. And so he would have been immediately gone. How will Jeff Jarrett react? I'm not sure. I mean, the spotlight's not on on GFW in the same exact way. So I suspect that they might be a little bit more tolerant in Global Force Wrestling of this type of behavior. It also probably depends on how much worse it gets. You know, if Alberto's arrested or whatsoever, or something like that, they may have to change their strategy. But I got to say, like, it's been clear. I put this in the most diplomatic way I can. It's been clear for quite a while, because a new story comes out every couple weeks about Alberto and Paige, that their behavior is erratic. And so you got to kind of question the wisdom in putting your title on a guy who's had that track record over the last year or so. Probably not the best idea.
That magic word love, it's either the best thing or just a kick in the nuts, you know?
But I want to talk this from a business standpoint, though, Mark. I mean, despite the fact of all the issues that Alberto's been dealing with, and the track record he has, say he didn't have that, again, hindsight's 2020, what's going on. Clearly, you know, there are issues going on there that, quite honestly, as cold-hearted as it might sound, you know, I don't really care. It's not my interest. It's not my business. But from a business standpoint, just putting the belt on somebody like Alberto, and the guy's talented. The guy can go in the ring. But is he the kind of guy right now, the talent that Global Force has right now? Is he the guy you want to be the face of your company? Could he carry a company?
You know, aside from all the personal issues that he and Paige have been going through the last year or so, I always think that, you know, my personal point of view is, you know, if you're not WWE and you're trying to sort of carve out a niche for yourself in the larger wrestling landscape, I think the idea of having former WWE guys or ex-WWE guys as your top guys, I think can end up making you look a little small time. To me, I think the better route is to build your own guys that have either never been in WWE or, you know, have the potential to go. You know, I think ROH does that really well. Well, to take a guy like Jay Lethal and elevate him and give him a great run, I think that puts you in a better position to seem different and not like a WWE light or WWE knockoff, as I worry Global Force sometimes does. I mean, when you have like an Alberto versus Bobby Lashley, two great personas, two great characters, two great wrestlers. That's where the main event Slammiversary, right? It's like, but they're also, you know, I think you come off as just like you're trying to be a fourth, I guess, WWE brand with those types of guys main eventing your pay-per-view. And better to use an EC3 type guy, I think, as a main eventer, your own homegrown stars.
Completely agree.
Great point. And then last but certainly not least, your short film with Rocky Romero, can you give a plot, any detail into what it is about and when we can expect to see it?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for asking about that. So Rocky Romero and I have been, along with Rocky's friend Sonny, the three of us wrote, I think it's okay if I say, just broadly, we've written basically a comedy parody version of Wrestling with Shadows.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Basically a fake wrestling documentary starring a character that Rocky's going to be playing called Chico El Luchador. And Chico gets screwed over in a big match, very similar to the way Bret Hart got screwed over in his big match. And
sounds like a Tijuana screw job, I think.
Yes. And we actually just shot some more literally this morning. We shot some more of it. So we're pretty darn close to finishing shooting. We're going to be done by the end of July, and we hope to release it this fall. And it's cracking us up. We think it's a lot of fun and funny and different than anything anybody's done out there. I really loved Southpaw Regional Wrestling that WWE did, and
yeah,
I thought those
funny.
Were a blast. And this is maybe sort of in the same vein, but different, but it's sort of a wrestling comedy sort of short. So we're excited about it. It's making us laugh, and we hope it makes everybody laugh when we release it this fall.
Wow, can't wait to see that. Just describing it for a bit, we definitely know it's going to be a barrel of laughs there. But last thing for me, though, I got to ask you this, because I always feel like wrestling is so implemental in everything around the world, especially in sports, too. And when you talk about combat fighting, it's even more than that. I mean, Conor McGregor, WWE, there have been talks him, you know, dealing with you know, Twitter war with Enzo Amore, and now the whole Mayweather McGregor fight, which is, you know, basically WWE altogether put together in this whole global exhibition match. Who do you got in that one, McGregor or Mayweather?
I mean, I guess you've got to bet on Mayweather. It's really, Conor's such a loose cannon, and there's always that chance that he gets a good shot in and knocks him out. Like, I don't expect it, but you never know. I also think there's a really, really outside chance that in like the third round, Conor just takes him down and chokes him out. You know?
Like, yeah, you never know. Or gives him a spinning
wheel.
Yeah,
the whole thing's sort of a circus anyway, so maybe he'll do it.
Yeah, you never know.
Listen, I wouldn't pay for it, but I will definitely find it somewhere that day.
Yeah, you know, it's not going to be cheap. It's gonna be, I think $100 for it.
I always tell Brian this. I think Amanda Nunes pulled out of the UFC card this weekend, and we have this whole Conor McGregor thing and Mayweather that's going to be like, you know, $100. Always go with wrestling for $9.99. You can watch something like Brock and Samoa Joe, and you can watch a guy attempt murder with an ambulance on another big dude.
Wow,
and
Jeff,
you're
how much did WWE pay you for that?
$9.99. How about that?
Free play.
Vince McMahon would love to hear you say that, right?
He'd be like, oh my God, that's perfect promotion. But listen, Mark, we'd love to have you and Rocky on when that comes out. That'd be great to do. And we'd love to have you back on to maybe SummerSlam or somewhere down the road, because we really appreciate your expertise, man.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. And yeah, it's been a pleasure to be here. And I hope we'll be doing some more. Rocky and I will be releasing that shirt this fall. And also, we'll hopefully have some more going on with New Japan. So
yes,
we'll wait and see as those guys as New Japan expands here in the U.S.
Great, yep. Just more of an opportunity for Mark
to make more of those tours,
more of those videos, and to mark out himself.
Yep.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, Mark, thanks exactly. A lot, man, and keep in touch. All right, and the best of luck to you.
Thanks a lot, guys. My pleasure.
Yep. Thanks goes out to Mark Warzeka, man, and really continued success. Can't wait till that film with Rocky Romero comes out. He's going to do a mockumentary of Wrestling with Shadows. So that's going to be interesting. And of course, we'd love to have him back. But, you know, talking about Great Balls of Fire, we're putting ribbon on it. I think it was probably the best pay-per-view of the whole year, put inside the Royal Rumble. I think that this one is right up there for the Raw brand and the G1, man. It was just a success. Great to talk to him about it. Talked about Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and, of course, the G1 Climax is coming very soon, and we will get probably the most anticipated third match between Kenny Omega and Okada. So, man, Mark, thank you so much for joining us. The great interview with him.
Definitely. You could see the enthusiasm he has, and I feel like I always repeat this, but it's true, Jeff. We have a very good, successful rate of having people coming on and just, you know, having that passion of talking about pro wrestling that we do enjoy speaking with them about. So, yeah, I mean, and the thing I want to emphasize the most, which we spoke about at the beginning of the show, was that what we spoke with Mark about as well, is that the mere fact that, you know, it's a great time to be a wrestling fan, because you know what? As much as the WWE is this gigantic juggernaut, it is not the only game in town, folks. And so by talking about the G1, talking about places like Ring of Honor, Global Force Wrestling, and all the other independent promotions all around the United States and around the world, it's just a great time to be a fan. And there's so much more places now to, you know, harness and to better your craft. So it was exciting talking to him, and I can't wait to have him back on again.
And again, thank you, Mr. Warzeka, so much. And again, Brian, we go to SmackDown really quick, and just a rundown. AJ Styles and John Cena team up, beat Kevin Owens and Rusev. Hey, listen, we almost got teased between the match between AJ Styles and John Cena, but of course Rusev and Owens, you know, challenge them, and they come out on the losing end. How do you feel about AJ Styles and John Cena teaming up?
You know, I kind of expected it. Two faces that run the place being interrupted by the two heels. I mean, it was written kind of in the stars. You thought you were going to see a one-on-one match, which I would have said would be a home run from SmackDown, seeing AJ Styles and John Cena, and then this match being ended in disqualification or whatever. But the match didn't even happen. We had this main event double tag team match here. So kind of predictable in a way, but at the same time, I think it's just showing a lot, despite the fact that John Cena is technically the way the WWE wants to present him as a free agent, AJ Styles is doing a great job. Because right now, who's the WWE champion? Jinder Mahal. But right now, everybody's focusing
all about
on
the U.S. title.
The U.S. title and AJ Styles.
Of course, AJ Styles, we will see who defends the title against Battleground. That's still to come. And then John Cena in a flag match with Rusev. We will, I guess, break that down next week in our Battleground preview show. Love hurts for Sami Zayn. And it leads most likely to a future matchup. And I would say book for Battleground between Mike Kanellis and Sami Zayn. So looking forward to that one if that happens.
You wanted to say Bennett, didn't you?
I did want to say Mike Bennett.
Of course.
Which is hard.
We have to conform to what WWE does. And it's Mike Kanellis. But exciting to see the debut. But unfortunately, I like to think at this point right now with Sami Zayn, it's kind of interesting where like you would like to think with Mike Kanellis, there's no way they're going to have Sami defeat him on his debut. I mean, they're trying to bring this guy up in this couple of Maria and Mike. So
SmackDown's power couple.
And you just like to think with Sami right now, is he finding himself in the scenario where he's going to be a guy that just kind of puts other people over? It's sad because he's really talented. You want to see him get his opportunities, but you know, he's just falling short. And he reminds me of like Ty Dillinger, for example. A guy can't get a win to save his life. You like to hope this rivalry will have, you know, something where the fans can get something out of it. So I'm looking forward to it, though.
And the bright spot for Ty Dillinger was that actually he did show up on SmackDown but lost to Jinder Mahal. Jinder Mahal brings the Punjabi prison next week. I don't know if he's going to get through customs. I don't know how he's going to do it. But he will promise that the Punjabi prison will be there awaiting Randy Orton next week as the go-home for Battleground is next week. And we'll preview Battleground and a whole lot more. And actually, I want to get in touch. I want to talk to you about something next week, too, is what is going on with Charlotte. That is definitely one thing that I want to talk to you about because
it's the whole women's division.
Charlotte got pinned by Tamina in a tag team match on SmackDown. You know, we'll get to that next week, and you know, when we preview Battleground, I just don't like the way they're booking Charlotte, and we'll get into that next week as we, again, once again, preview Battleground. Just a few loose ends here, Brian. Russell Pro, by the time this airs, Russell Pro would be in Allentown, New Jersey, and you know, this would be the first one that we miss, but we wish all of them the best. I know Kevin Matthews is taking on Bobby Wayward for the Russell Pro championship, so you know it's definitely a good show, and we will definitely make sure we catch up with the next one. But you know, we also talked to you know Mark about the whole Paige and Alberto and Patron situation. Global Force did the right thing, suspended Alberto Del Rio. Let's call him Alberto Del Rio. It's so much easier. They suspended him. Just your thoughts, real quick, on the whole suspension.
Bennett, Michael Kanellis doesn't work, but we're gonna call him Del Rio. Okay.
What do you mean?
No, like we're saying we want to call him Mike Bennett, but it's Mike Kanellis, but we don't want to conform to Global Force Wrestling and call him Alberto El Patron.
Okay. No, but your thoughts real quick on the whole suspension.
Don't give me that face. You're just backtracking like a politician, Jeff. What I think about that, it's like, yeah, you had no choice here. I mean, if Jeff Jarrett didn't do anything, then, you know, the egg would be on his face. But right now, like you mentioned before, you know, Alberto, you just have to let it go, man. And he, you know, talk about Enzo Amore being his
own worst enemy. Let go of who? Paige?
Both. Let go of both. He's got so much vindictive feelings towards the WWE, though.
That's in the past. We know that he can't let it go. We know that he's obsessed with Triple H and the McMahons and everybody there because he wishes he was still there and he can't get over there. Talk about the whole Paige thing, though. Talk about the suspension.
Both are interlinked together because Paige is still part of WWE product, so he still has that bitterness around it. So if you want me to forget about his issues with the WWE, his issues with Paige right now, I don't know. Honestly, I don't care. But it looks from his track record for Alberto, he doesn't have the best track record of relationships. Basically, his first marriage ended. Don't want to speculate that he was being unfaithful in his marriage.
Oh, he was freaking.
But again,
definitely.
I don't make the speculation. You could do it if you want to because I don't get in other people's business. But that being said, you know, this is a toxic relationship. But what do we know with toxic relationships, Jeff? It's going to explode and implode some way. But at the same time, you know, whatever way it does go, Global Force has to cover their butt. But right now, what do you do? Because you pre-recorded 4 weeks ahead with him as your champion. So they're going to have to do a lot of backtracking in terms of changing things up. Because right now, if he's indefinitely suspended because of these allegations and the investigation into domestic violence, you know, why would you even want it? Nowadays, if you're even thought or somewhat accused or thought of doing domestic violence, cut ties with them right now because you don't want that around your company.
Yeah, it's definitely a no-no nowadays. Yeah. Not that it should always be a no-no, but now teams, organizations, companies are going to be aware of that in the situation in the world we live in today. Listen, again, it's none of our business. We hear kind of mock the whole on again relationship, but we don't like it to get to this severity. So whatever the situation is, just hopefully. Listen, I don't know what Paige's career is going forward with WWE, but she needs to get this for her, her health, for her sanity, for all that stuff, And if it's something that it's salvageable, let them save it. But other than that, then they should, cut ties with that relationship. But then again, who are we to judge? But on a brighter note, dude, the Mae Young Classic, we get to introduced to the 32 females that will be competing in that event. It's going to be a stacked show, man, and August 28th is where it all starts. Any girls pique your curiosity that you've seen so far?
One person that piques my curiosity would be Rachel Ellering, which they call her Rachel Evers, and
Tessa Blanchard.
Tessa Blanchard. I mean, that's just one name that sticks out because they did it during the introduction. Lita had alluded to it. I mean, we all recognize that last name. And Tessa, just like Charlotte, has done a great job of making a name for herself and being associated with the Blanchard Four Horsemen category. But at the same time, she's become her own person. So I just think she's a talented individual, and I think sky's the limit for her. If she doesn't get signed by WWE after this Mae Young Classic, to me, it's just a matter of time because she's definitely a diamond in the rough. Diamonds are forever, and so is Tessa Blanchard.
Woo!
Now that's Ric Flair.
And I'm sure, I thought you were going to say the Horsemen. So are the Horsemen. So, but I'm sure Tully Blanchard will be watching that with a huge interest, too. So a very, very stacked women's tournament, and very excited. It kicks off August 28th. I know you'll see the results beforehand, but I'm looking forward to that. And,
one thing is seeing the results, but the other thing is seeing all the outcomes of how it happens.
The matches.
Which is what we saw for the Cruiserweight Classic, too. So it didn't disappoint. The Mae Young Classic has a lot to live up to, but if these women are as hungry and as driven as people say they are, then they're going to, knock it out of the park.
Yeah, and you are listening to the High Spot Podcast. I am Jeff Martin alongside the Trendsetter. Follow us on Twitter, man, at High Spot Podcast. Also, listen, we're on iTunes and on SoundCloud. Leave a review. Leave a rating. That's the only way that we can better this show and provide a better show for you guys to listen to, better quality, too. Also, find us on all social media, on our Twitter, on our Facebook page, on the Instagram, and, of course, on Snapchat. And also, next week, we've got a great show for you, Hyann Young from Reality of Wrestling will join us. She had a great article written about her by Bleacher Report's Ryan Dilbert, which was very fascinating. It's a Geico full-time worker by day and chasing her dream to be a female wrestler by night. And we'll talk to her about her experience of taking on Nia Jax last year in Monday Night Raw and just how Booker T's helped her along the way to get where she is. And definitely a girl with a bright future. She will join us next week. Brian, man, the summer months are getting hotter and hotter as we head to SummerSlam and Battleground. Next week's show, man, it's going to be just better and better and better.
And that's what we do here on the High Spot Podcast. So after listening to this episode, folks, and all the social media platforms that we're available on, life's just going to be
too sweet. Sometimes the world looks perfect.